choice to join us this morning, whether being someone who has joined us online or actually in person this morning, and has already been stated by Chad this morning, we are grateful for your presence. There are any number of other things you could have chosen to do today at this time, but you have made the choice to be here because of your desire to just get closer to Jesus, to worship God, to express the desires of your heart, to encourage others. There are so many good reasons for us to be here today. Amen. And I sometimes will ask you, if you're glad you're here, say amen. I'll go ahead and ask you today, are you glad you're here? Amen. It's good to be here in the midst of a life that is sometimes troubling and difficult and challenging. And that is a part of what we'll be talking about today. In this lesson, we have been talking about star power. And so when you talk about star power and you're looking at the book of Philippians, the main passage that, or kind of the key verse that has been the foundation of what we've been talking about the last couple of years and in ensuing the last couple of weeks, not years. One of those senior moments. Maybe it's just seemed like years. But the passage in Philippians 2 says, do everything without grumbling or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and a crooked generation. And then here's the key text. Then you will shine amongst them like stars. One translation says here, you will shine like stars in the universe or in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. And so that is our call. That is our challenge. We've been talking a little bit about the stars. We've talked about the main star or the only star in our particular solar system, the sun. And we've talked about the power of that sun. And even though it is a relatively average-sized star, it still packs a lot of punch, doesn't it? And we've talked about our star power. We've mentioned the fact in one of the previous lessons that you don't have to be the biggest or the brightest star to make a difference in the life of somebody else. We are called to shine brightly. The sun, we remember, is 93 million miles away from us. Takes 8 minutes for the light and the heat and the energy from the sun to reach us. The surface of the sun is about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty hot. I'd say, how hot is that? You could fry an egg pretty quick on the surface of the sun. In fact, you could annihilate an egg on the surface of the... But that's not even where the most energy and power is in the sun. The core of the sun is estimated by astronomers and scientists to be about 27 million degrees. And there are other stars out there that are even hotter and more powerful and bigger than that. It really is amazing. And so God tells us, and Paul, as he wrote the Philippians, was telling them that you can shine like a star. You can exert energy and light in your life that's going to make a difference in the world today and make a difference in the lives of others. Last week, we looked at the question of how can we make a difference? What is the key in living for others, not living for self, living unselfishly? And we asked ourselves the question, am I living a sacrificial life or am I living a selfish life? And that relates to not only how we live ourselves, but how we relate to others and treat other people. Remember, Paul says, don't just look out for your own interests, but be concerned about the interests of others. Don't be filled with conceit or vanity. You need to consider others better than yourselves. And so what is the key? What is the power to do that in terms of us living for others and serving others and caring about others? It's this right here. It's having the mind of Christ. It's having the attitude of Jesus. So when Paul, we noted last week, when he says, I want you to consider others better, I want you to not be selfish, I want you to be willing to serve others and meet their needs, he says, this is how you do it. You grow in the mind or the attitude of Christ. And that attitude is, though he did not consider his godhood or his deity something that he clung to, it was his by right. He is creator. He is divine. He is independent. God has no need. At the same time, though, God is love, and God is giving, and God is serving, and God in creating us wanted us to live and be with him and enjoy fellowship with him forever. But how do we do that with our sin? That's the big barrier. But the barrier is taken care of by God himself, who becomes a human being, becomes like us in every way. Paul says that though he was God, fully divine, he did not consider all the privileges and prerogatives of what it means to be divine, something to be clung to, but he emptied himself, became nothing, so that we might have life. You want to live a selfless life, a sacrificial life? Look to Jesus. He's the one who humbled himself, had all the rights and privileges of beyond anything that we can imagine as God, and gave up those rights and became a human being, experiencing all the things that we experience, and ultimately goes to a cross. Paul says he took on the form of a servant, a bondservant, a slave, and eventually went to a cross, the death of the cross. And so it's challenging, isn't it? And isn't it challenging to be like Jesus in that way? It's almost daunting. I think maybe I've told you about the time when we'd put our kids to bed, and we would take turns putting them down, and we would talk to them and pray with them and just kind of process the day. And on one occasion, as Andrew and I were talking about God, about Jesus, Andrew looked at me and said, Dad, is Jesus like you? That's a kind of an unusual way to ask that question, isn't it? You usually say, hey, are you like Jesus? But our children, those around us, many times will get an impression of Jesus based on who we are. And How was I going to answer that? Is Jesus like you? I said, no. I said, Andrew, I said, Jesus is so much bigger and better in every way than me. And I'm trying to be like Jesus, but I'm not always like Jesus the way I should be like Jesus. It's a challenge. As we look at our own lives and as we look at our relationships with others, this idea of letting Jesus be so in us and live through us that we shine like these stars because we have the attitude and the mind of Christ. But when we capture that, when we grasp that, when we embrace that, then our attitude changes. One of my favorite songs, an old classic from the 1700s, written by Isaac Watts, is the song, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, upon which the Prince of Glory died. My richest gain I count but loss, and I pour contempt on all my pride. Forbid it, Lord, that I should boast, except in the death of Christ my Lord. All the vain things that charm me the most, I sacrifice them to your blood. See from his head that wore the crown of thorns. See from his head, his hands, his feet, sorrow and love flow mingled down. Did ever such love and sorrow meet? Of thorns compose so rich a crown. Were the whole realm of nature mine, if I had everything, that were an offering far too small. If I had all of that and gave it all to you, Lord, that still would not be enough. I could never pay you back. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. And so he calls us into that kind of life. And as Paul wrote the Philippians, he called them into the same unselfish, sacrificial life. And he recognized that they would face challenges. In the first chapter, he says to them, whatever happens, whatever you face, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. For it has been granted to you, it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for him. And so as we live this life that shines, as we seek to have the attitude of Jesus in our lives, we understand, and Paul makes it very clear, that things can get very tough. They can get very difficult. He's talking to the Philippians, and they're going through some kind of persecution here. We don't know the exact nature of the persecution or the difficulties they were facing, but the fact is, we all face difficulties, challenges, trouble, whatever you want to call it in our lives. It's a reality we have to deal with. So whether it's dealing with disease and sickness or difficult relationships or financial troubles, you just go down the list. We all have to face them eventually. Some of you are going through some storms right now in your life that are quite daunting. And it's challenging, isn't it? But Paul says to them, and he says to us, whatever happens, whatever it may be, whatever those challenges are, Jesus said, I have told you these things in John 16 as he spoke to his disciples about what they were going to be facing and the challenges they were going to face as he went to a cross. And he says, listen, I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble. But be of good cheer. I think the King James translation says there, be of good cheer, or take heart. I have overcome the world. So how do we react to those challenges that we face, the trouble that we face, the heartache, the grief, all the things that we look at that may be considered negative? Well, I like to think of it this way. Which one are you? Now, I'm going to be sharing with you several cliches this morning. So we'll just call this Grady's cliche sermon. And I couldn't help, when you're talking about a subject like this, all these things flood into your head that are such a part of our vernacular that, you know, I almost don't want to talk about it. But sometimes these old expressions really do still carry a lot of clout. And to me, this is one of them. Are you a thermometer or are you a thermostat? And we know that, right? We know what the difference between a thermometer and a thermostat is. What does a thermostat do? Well, it does something different from what a thermometer does, because a thermometer just simply reads or reflects the conditions around it. The thermometer does not change anything. The thermometer does not have any effect upon anything else other than telling you what the conditions are that surround you. So a thermometer is a reflection or just an expression of the climate around it. But a thermostat affects change. A thermostat does something, takes action, is not passive. It produces a change in the temperature. And so that is what we are called to be. We are called to be a thermometer in terms of how we live versus being a thermostat that affects change and actually does something. And so that brings us to the main point of my lesson this morning. We asked a couple of questions as we started this series. Am I sacrificial or am I selfish? Another one that we looked at, am I joyful or am I gloomy? And we'll talk more about joy in a future sermon. But it's this question, am I confident or am I defeated? As we think about all those negatives, all those challenges, all the bad stuff that happens, listen to what Paul says once again. He says, being confident of this, he says, I am confident in God, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion to the day of Christ Jesus. This isn't the only place that the term confident appears in this short letter to the Philippians. This whole letter, while it talks about challenges, is also filled with words that are so positive. Paul said, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. And so that's a challenge for us to take ownership of our own selves, our own lives. But remember what he says, for it is God who is at work in you to do his will, to seek his will. God is at work in you to bring about everything that he has called you to do and be by his power in Jesus Christ. Am I living a life of confidence? Or am I living a life even with the difficulties? Or am I living a life that is defeated? And then there's this one from Philippians 4:13. I can do all things. I can do everything, one translation here says, through him who gives me strength. I still love the King James translation here. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Jesus put it this way, with God all things are possible. With men some things are impossible, but with God all things are possible. Now, all things. I remember in college at a class with one of my professors, and he's talking about this idea, and he stands up there and he says, does that mean that Harvey Floyd, if he wants to be a linebacker for the Green Bay Packers, and you should have seen Dr. Floyd, does that mean that if I want to do that, I can do it? And obviously, the answer is probably not, okay? I will say this. If it was God's will for Harvey Floyd, all 111 pounds of him, probably one of the thinnest men I ever knew, in his 60s at the time, lived to be in his 90s. If God wanted Harvey Floyd to be a linebacker for the Green Bay Packers, and that was in God's will for Harvey Floyd, then he could do it, okay? And so this is not just some kind of name it, claim it kind of thing in our lives. It's just saying that if God is calling you and leading you somewhere in your life to do something that's according to his will, then God will enable you and give you the power to do that. And you can be confident that you can do it. Now, you go into the context of where this is found in Philippians chapter 4, and you see there that in that context, Paul is talking about circumstances. He is talking about being content. And he is thanking the Philippians for monetary gifts that he has received to support him in his work in ministry. It's in that passage that Paul says, I've learned that whatever state I'm in, whatever condition, whatever the circumstances, I'm going to be content. And what Paul means by that is not that he is going to live a passive life. He certainly does not mean that. But he is saying, through the power of Jesus, I can bear up under any circumstance. I can deal with any difficult thing this life throws at me, including this. Here's another cliche. I can't help it. You're going to get a lot of them today. You know how this one ends, right? When life gives you lemons. All right, say it. Now you say it right. When life gives you lemons, what? Really? I thought it was when life gives you lemons, become sour, right? Isn't that how it's supposed to work? No, but for some people, I looked at some memes this week, looking up a great picture for my slides for when life gives you lemons, of course, make lemonade. And here's a couple of them that I found. The first one is, when life gives you lemons, grab tequila and salt, all right? And the second one, you can't quite see it as well. It says, when life gives you lemons, suck it up. All right? just got to buck up, man, and be tough and grit your teeth. And, you know, that's how we face life. You need to toughen up. You need to be tough enough. You need to quit whining. You need to quit complaining and just deal with it. And then the alternative to that for some people is when you face difficulties, trial, you're dealing with depression, whatever it might be, well, then you escape and medicate, right? But that's not what we're called to do or be. It's not a matter of just sucking it up and being tough on our own. And it's not a matter of escaping, avoiding what we need to face and deal with it in a positive way. It all depends on how you look at it, really our perspective. Several months ago, I preached a sermon, and I shared with you some Rorschach ink blots. Remember I gave you the ink blot test and asked you what you saw? Well, I'm going to do it today as well. I'm going to do it just for a couple of things to illustrate a point. All right, what did you see first? Now, don't say it out loud. How many of you saw a dog first? Raise your hand. You saw a dog first. All right. You know what experts who look at these pictures and, you know, read personalities by what these pictures say about the people who see a dog first? It says you are loyal, you are trustworthy, you are dependable. Think about that, all right? So how many of you saw the cats first when you looked? Oh, man, just a few of you. Basically, that means you need a lot of help, all right? I'm sorry, I couldn't help that. So what do you see? There we go. What do you see here? All right, what do you see first here? So how many of you saw the duck or the bird when you looked? All right. How many of you saw the rabbit? Okay, you don't raise your hands now after what I said. That doesn't mean anything, okay? It just means that we can look at something and see two completely different things in terms of our situations or our circumstances, in terms of how we respond to it. And this is one of my favorites, and this is just another one of these little mind benders. Which of these pairs has a lighter green color? Which one? The left, okay. No, actually, it's kind of a trick. It's the same. This color is the exact same color as that. And yet, when this aqua green pair has these white lines going through it, the green looks lighter than the green over here because the black lines are going through it, and you're looking at all these contrasts, but it's just caused by just how your brain processes it, and it looks different. Now, let me give you another cliche. Half full or half empty, right? There's so many different ways we can look at different things. So many cliches out there. I can't even begin to go through all those cliches that tell us there are different ways of looking at things and different ways to respond to things. Every cloud has a silver lining, okay? Look on the bright side. Accentuate the, eliminate the negative. Yeah, okay, there we go. I have somebody singing along with me. And so let's get back to the story in Philippi. I want you to think just a minute. I mentioned in the first lesson, I wanted you to look at Acts 16 to see how everything started there in Philippi. And there were a lot of tough beginnings in the church at Philippi. It was not easy. In fact, when Paul got there, the Jewish population was so small that they didn't even have a synagogue. And almost every village or town, if there were enough people there who, you know, had those beliefs and that faith, there was a synagogue. But not in this city, apparently. primarily a Gentile city, but there were a few women who went out to the river to pray and to worship God together. Not many of them. Eventually, a lady who was named Lydia was converted to Christ, and that was a positive thing, but things were not all positive in Philippi. I mean, it wasn't long before they were there. There was a slave girl who worked for her owner, and he was making money off of her, and she was telling fortunes and predicting things, and she was following Paul and Silas all over the place, screaming things out. And finally, Paul cast that demon from her, and she wasn't able to do what she was able to do before, and it made her owners really, really mad and upset because she was a source of income for them. And so they got riled up the whole place, got the city in an uproar, basically caused a riot, and Paul and Silas were thrown into jail, thrown into prison. Not just under Roman guard, which he was when he wrote this letter. I mean, they're thrown in the inner prison, stocks put on their feet, they are beaten, and that's where things stood. You think about that. And yet, what are they doing? If you read it in Acts 16, you'll see it for yourself. What are they doing as they're in there? They are singing and praying hymns to God. But that isn't the worst thing. There's also an earthquake. But they didn't escape. The doors were open. Their chains were unloosed. And something happened after that. I'll talk about that in just a second. But there were tough beginnings at Philippi. What about current circumstances? Well, from my reading this morning, you saw about them. There was a loss of freedom when he wrote this letter. He was under house arrest. He could not do what he wanted to, was in chains, and his freedom was taken from him. There were opponents who were using what he was going through, God bless you, using what he was going through there to stir up trouble for him, causing great stress on him, because they were using it as an opportunity to discredit his ministry. And if they discredited his ministry, that would affect the good he could do for other people. Not only that, there was this prospect of possible execution for him. And so if you read on in Philippians, it says, "Yes, I'll continue to rejoice." This is in chapter 1, in verse 19. "For I know through your prayers and the help given by the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, and die is gain." And so what he is doing here is he is talking about this thing. He is flipping the script in terms of how he is looking at this. How is he choosing to view his current circumstances and what he is facing? What is the story right now, this day in his life, and what will the story of his life be as he moves forward? And so he is not allowing himself to be a prisoner, to be dominated, for him to be defined by his negative circumstances. He is seeing things differently. He is looking on the bright side. And so, as he looks at his circumstances and he's trying to look at things differently, this is what he says in chapter 1. "What has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel." What's happening in your life, Paul? "I'm in prison. I can't do what I want to. People are making fun of me. People are taking advantage of me. I might die in this prison." What's happening in your life, Paul? This is what is happening. What's happened in my life has served to advance the good news. And he goes on to say, people know why I'm here. They know I'm here because of Jesus. And my presence under guard in prison is causing other people to be bolder in their faith and to share the good news of Jesus. And what about these people who were speaking Jesus out of selfish motives and trying to hurt Paul? I love what Paul says there. What does it matter? If it's me, I'm probably going to be pouting and complaining, saying, "Woe is me." Paul says, what does it matter? God's going to deal with them. Christ is being preached. Whether I live, or whether I die. Whether I live or whether I die. You ask a lot of people, what's the absolute worst possible thing that could happen to you? It'd be this right here. The worst possible thing. Okay? A lot of people, many people, you know, death is a hard thing, you know. And yet, what many would consider the worst thing, Paul considers the best thing. He says, look, if I were to die, if they were to put me to death, that's better for me, to be with the Lord. To live as Christ and die as gain. I thought I might have time this morning to talk about this couple. Got an email yesterday. I get Voice of the Martyrs. It's a great publication. There was a story about this man and this woman who died in Uganda in 2004. The sacrifices they made to go over there from here, sold everything they had, left their family, felt like God was calling them to this remote, difficult place in Uganda. And in this area of Uganda, it's predominantly Muslim. They were getting all kinds of pushback and persecution. And eventually, they were put to death, both killed on their knees in front of their hut. And yet, what their son said about them, I've got to read it to you. I'm looking at the clock. I'm not going to go too long today, okay? So, listen to this. What a testimony of their lives. They had always been completely invested in God, the son says. Our parents were absolutely certain of where they were going when they died. Because of that certainty, they were willing to go wherever they felt they were called to go. And if you had told them before they left that leaving would cost them their lives in service of their Lord, they still would have gone. It wouldn't have changed their minds. It might have changed how they said goodbye, but nothing was stopping them. Nothing was stopping them. Okay, a couple of quick takeaways. The right path, the best path, is not always the easiest path. And we've got to tell ourselves over and over again, because a lot of times we will avoid, we will escape pain and difficulty. And a lot of times when we do that, we end up causing more pain and difficulty. But there are so many things in life that the right way is not always the easiest thing. And that goes from everything. If you want to be healthier, you want to exercise, you want to eat right, it takes discipline. It's not always easy, but the results are there. You raise your kids. There are challenges. Sometimes they push you, and they go through hard, difficult, terrible things. And sometimes, you know, you're tempted to just give up. But no, you're committed to them. You know, sometimes it's tough love, but it's not always easy. Success and growth often comes through struggle and perseverance. And I want you to notice, when you look at the end of Philippians, as he closes this letter, he makes this statement: all the saints send you greetings, especially those who belong to Caesar's household. What's happening here? Him being there, and maybe some of those who were there with him at times, had such an influence where they were and under their circumstances that eventually some people, now it could have been servants, it doesn't mean it was the son or the daughter of the emperor. When you talk about a household in this day, especially Caesar's household, I mean, you're probably talking about hundreds of people that are considered a part of his household. But nonetheless, there were some who were converted to Jesus because he was in prison and he was where he was. It's not always easy, but sometimes it, through perseverance, we have success. And don't give up. There's always a light here. I wanted to throw in another cliche as we came to a close. Don't quit. Don't give up. Even if it's hard, even if it brings grief, even if it brings tears, Don't give up, because God is at work in you and God is at work for you. And so it's just a matter of trusting in Him and giving yourself completely and wholly to Him. And here's the final screen. Jesus can change your life forever. And I want you, we're not going to look at it this morning, but I want you to look at Acts 16 if you haven't already. And I want you to read again about how this jailer who threw Paul and Silas into jail, they were beaten, put them in stocks. He could not have cared less about those two men. He was just doing his job. And yet, by the end of the chapter and the end of the story, this man is led to Jesus, asked the question, "What must I do to be saved?" He's told, "Man, you need to believe in Jesus." And so Jesus was shared with him. He was baptized into Christ. Not only that, the jailer who gave approval to their beating and the one who threw them into the inner prison and put them in stocks and couldn't have cared less about them. Later on in the story, he is washing their wounds. He's changed. Invites him into his home with joy. Jesus can do the same for you. Right now where you are. And so, please seriously think about your relationship with Him, where you stand with Him right now, your perspective on life. All those cliches we've talked about today. I know, they're just cliches. But there's a lot of truth in those cliches. But really, all of those cliches, they don't mean anything really in terms of the things that matter the most without Jesus in the picture. He's the one who turns our view upside down. So however we can help you or encourage you now in the future, please let us know. Because we want you to have that light in your life. Let's sing.